Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I want to remind you that next week is our 7th anniversary of being on the air. I'm really looking forward to celebrating an anniversary week with you, and we got a lot of special folks lined up for you. Let me just tell you about some of the people who are going to be with us next week. Nat Kiplinger is going to be here. Administrator Hector Barreto of the SBA is going to be here. Bill Dunkelberg is going to be here with the NFIB. Tim Berry with Palo Alto Software is going to be here. Steve Wittenborn with IBM is going to be here. Steve Forbes, you know who Steve Forbes is, he's going to be here next week. And Pete DuPont, the former governor of Delaware and former presidential candidate and former representative, former congressman, Pete DuPont's going to be with us. And Karen Kerrigan and on. We got so many great folks. So many people who've been with us for a long time, who've been longtime supporters of all the things that you do and that I do, and we're going to have them. So we're going to have a great celebration all next week. I'm looking forward to that. Folks, one of the things, by the way, Joan Pride is on her way in. We're going to hook up with her in just a little bit. But before we do that, I had a conversation with somebody recently, and we were talking about the war in Iraq, and this person said, "I don't like war. I like peace. I want peace." And, you know, she's right. I want peace, too. But that's not what some other people, how some other people feel about the world. And they don't want to let people live in peace. They don't want to let people live in freedom. They don't want self-determination. They want to determine themselves how other people should live. And it reminded me of this poem that you've heard me read before. And it's a poem that speaks to that issue, and it also speaks to today, this being Veterans Day. And it talks about those people who not only were veterans, those men and women who not only were veterans, not only paid the price with their time and their sacrifice, but these people that this poem was thinking about paid the supreme price. It's I do not know the author. I wish I did. If somebody knows who it is, I wish you'd tell me. But it's a wonderful poem, and I want to read it to you right now, and I think it's a very important one on this Veterans Day. I watched the flag pass by one day. It fluttered in the breeze. A young Marine saluted it, and then he stood at ease. I looked at him in uniform, so young, so tall, so proud, with hair cut square and eyes alert. He'd stand out in any crowd. I thought about how many men like him had fallen through the years. How many died on foreign soil? How many mothers' tears? How many pilots' planes shot down? How many died at sea? How many foxholes were soldiers' graves? No, freedom isn't free. I heard the sound of taps one night when everything was still. I listened to the bugler play and felt a sudden chill. I wondered how many times taps had meant amen when a flag had draped a coffin of a brother or a friend. I thought of all the children, of the mothers and the wives, of fathers and sons and husbands with interrupted lives. I thought about a graveyard at the bottom of the sea, of unmarked graves at Arlington. No, freedom isn't free. Nobody likes war, ladies and gentlemen, and least of all me. As many of you know, my son, who just got back from spending 9 months in Fallujah, and I didn't talk about it a lot while he was there, but I am proud of him. I know some men who took his place, who are in the reserve unit, the Marine unit that took his place, and they're actually now engaged in the taking of Fallujah, which is happening even as we speak. As ugly as war is, one of the things that I think Americans can be proud of is that when we go to war, our motives are freedom. And sometimes things happen in that process, in the attempt to deliver freedom, to deliver self-determination to people, to other people, to allow them to be able to live and to work and to do business and to travel as they please, to vote, to participate in a democracy of some kind, whatever that country is making, whatever it looks like. Democracy looks different in Turkey than it does in America. Democracy looks different in Afghanistan than it does in America. We understand that. That's not a problem. But we are interested in making sure that as much as possible, that people around the world have self-determination, they have some level of freedom. And in that process, things happen that we don't like. Men and women die. Men and women are injured. Men and women have to sacrifice. But isn't it fortunate for the world that the last remaining superpower is a benevolent one? The last remaining superpower is a nation that has a history, a 200-plus year history, not of being without mistakes. We've made our mistakes. And you know what else? We're going to make mistakes. We're going to make more. We haven't made all of them. There are more to come. The only people that I know who don't make mistakes are the people who don't attempt to do anything. And that's not the way this nation is. And with all of our faults, our ultimate goal, and I know it's mine as a citizen, I know it's yours, I believe it's yours as a citizen, and I believe it is our governments, whether they're Democrat or Republican or independent, it is the members of our government, to see people around the world have freedom, to have self-determination, to be able to participate in their government and to feel that the outcome of their participation will result in elections, for example. But isn't it great, isn't it fortunate for the world that the last remaining superpower is the only nation that when they conquer a country, gives it back to the people. And the only thing that we ask for, the only land we ask for, is enough to bury our dead. And find another nation that has done that so consistently in the past, in the history of mankind. Find another nation that has done that. I know of no other. And not that there aren't other good nations in the world, but we're the only one like that that is also a superpower. And you know what? I think it's a good thing that the bad guys fear us. I think that's a really good thing. 20 after, I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Going to be right back. With any luck, Joan Pryor will be here. But even if she's not, I'm going to start talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world today. Right after these messages, 20 after. Stay with us. See you later, alligator. After a while, crocodile. We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, and you're listening to the Small Business Network. I'm glad you're here. Our website is www.jbsba.com, and when you get there, don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter. And thank you to all of you who have been visiting our website, all of you new folks. Many of you are just finding it and writing us nice notes and letting us know how much you enjoy it, how much it means to you. And I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me and to all of our of the folks in my organization. We work hard trying to make that available to you. And it's the most unique small business site in the world. As you know, we create and distribute more multimedia small business content than anybody else in the world. And you can find it all right there at jbsba.com or smallbusinessadvocate.com or jimblassingame.com. So we got three different ways that you can remember us and find us, and be sure to check it out. And it's all free to you, unless you want to buy my book, and I'm going to charge you for that. But other than that, it's all free thanks to my organization and our fine sponsors. Joan Pryor is not here yet. She's on her way, but we'll get her on here in a few minutes. But I want to go ahead and start talking about what Kiplinger has to say about what's going on in the world. One of the things they pointed out this week was that one of the things that Mr. Bush is going to have to deal with in his next 4 years in earnest is the deficit. And there are our economist friends have pointed out there are two kinds of deficits. There are the temporary deficits, which have been brought on by the war, have been brought on by 9/11, the effects of 9/11, investing in the protection of our nation, in homeland security. All of those expenses have contributed to the current deficits that we have. But then there's another level of deficit called the structural deficits, and those are the ones that the economists that I know are not so much concerned about the temporary deficits, because sometimes deficits are actually good for the economy. Government deficits can actually spur the economy a little bit. But the ones they're afraid of are the structural deficits. And Joan Pride is here. She's with us now. I'm going to get her to weigh in on this heavy issue. Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, welcome.
Oh, good morning, Jim.
Hi.
Hi.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
God bless those national holidays.
Oh, don't get me started.
Hey, Joan, I was just talking about one of the biggest things that Mr. Bush is going to have to deal with now that he's won re-election for four more years is the deficit. You know, he's one of the raps on Mr. Bush, one of the many raps that people have come up with on Mr. Bush is that he's cut all these taxes, but he hasn't vetoed a single spending bill.
Yeah, and that's a rap that I think comes from some fiscal conservatives.
That's right. That's exactly right. Which typically what you're saying is another way of saying Republican, right?
Well, I guess you could have a fiscally conservative Democrat, but there are conservative. You know, there's I guess the evangelical Christians who helped get him over the top, and there's also folks who consider themselves fiscal conservatives, even if they're not social conservatives. And my understanding is they've been pretty upset with the president. Now, it's not just his fault; it's Congress. His fault too, but they have been upset with him for not trying to push harder to try to keep the deficit under control. I mean, he theoretically could have vetoed some appropriations bills to send a message to Congress to, you know, stop the rampant spending.
Well, and I wonder, and I'm not trying to be an apologist for him at all, but I wonder how things would have been different had we not been attacked, had we not been at war had gone to war in Iraq. I wonder if things would have been different, or if things would have been maybe the same. You know, somebody once said, Joan, I heard somebody say recently that we now know, this person said he believed that we now know that the big spending party is whichever one's in control.
That's right. Well, you can see the chairman of the Appropriations Committees are Republicans, and I think the Appropriations Committees are still pretty much loading those spending bills with pork, as they always have.
Yeah. And so now that, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to me, Joan, over the next year to see how Mr. Bush reacts to these kinds of things. Now that he's basically not beholden, you know, there's no... You know, the economy's doing okay. We can kind of feel like it's on a fairly sound footing. He's got a little more wind in his back because of the increase in the number of Republicans in the House and the Senate.
Right.
He's got some more judges. He's got the war in Iraq ought to be improving with the elections coming up in a couple of months. He ought to be able to really be a little more of a little more of a fuss budget over the budget over the next few years.
I would think that that's possible.
We will see, though, won't we?
Well, you know, he does have a pretty full plate in terms of tax cuts that he wants to push through, and they are going to be expensive.
Well, aren't the tax cuts primarily just making the ones we have permanent?
Well, that's the main thing, but he has also talked about this idea of tax reform, which we don't know the specifics of yet, but he also wants to bring back that idea of tax-favored savings accounts that he had proposed, I guess, over the last couple of years.
But now that's for privatizing Social Security.
Well, that's that, but he also has these savings accounts in addition to privatizing Social Security. And I just remember the acronyms, the LSAs and the RSAs.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
They were called lifetime savings accounts, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you could put your money in these accounts and get it out tax-free, and I don't think there are any restrictions in terms of the kinds that you have with an IRA now.
Right.
And which is really a backdoor approach to ending taxation of interest and dividends.
Mm-hmm. which I think is a good thing. One of the things that's happened, Joan, and I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break. We're coming up on the break. When we come back after these messages, we're going to talk to Joan Price some more about this. It's good to have her back. 29 after. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Stay with us.
Talkers Magazine calls Jim Blassingame one of the best talk show hosts in the industry.
Now remember, I do my best work when I'm being worshipped as a god.
He's Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate.
Welcome back. 34 after. This is the Small Business Network, and I'm glad you're here. Joan Pride is our guest. I'm glad she's here, too. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, we were talking about, one of the things we were talking about is simplifying the tax code, which is the term that you use. And I really like that term. I believe that the next 4 years could be historic, a historic presidential term for President Bush. And I think he gets that. I think he believes that he has an opportunity and the leadership interest in making some changes that probably won't be appreciated or maybe not for a while. I think it'll be long after he's out of office that we'll look back. If he's successful, for example, in simplifying the tax code, what if we could go to a code that basically abolishes the current tax code?
Well, he has also said, and he's right about this, that he feels he has to move quickly if he's going to do something historic in that area and also in Social Security, because he figures he has about 18 months before whatever honeymoon he's on could possibly fall apart.
I think he's right.
He does have a good position in terms of his majorities in the House and Senate, so you would think things would sail through. But there could be some infighting even among the Republicans. I'm not saying it will happen, but it is possible. So he really can't squander this opportunity. He needs to move as quickly as possible.
He said he has political capital, but it's not a blank check. And so what I think is going what I predict, Joan, is going to be the thing that decides whether he's successful or not is how well he chooses his battles.
That's right. And I think you're right. And he can't have too many of them. He's got to pick just one or two or three, and that's it.
And you know what that means, Joan? I think that means the first thing that's got to happen is they got to make sure that these elections come off in Iraq, that they happen in January, that the government gets established, and that Iraq needs to not be on the radar screen in 2005 as much as it is now.
Well, right. The agenda for the second term is mainly domestic. He has to turn to that.
Yep.
But in order to do that, as you point out, he can't be distracted by what's going on overseas.
Mm-hmm.
So Iraq has to be brought, if not to a full conclusion, at least put on a direction with the elections that will allow him to focus more on the domestic side.
Two changes that have been made already in the cabinet. Evans is gone from Commerce, or is leaving from Commerce, and Ashcroft is leaving from the Attorney General's office. Evans is an old friend of his. I've met Secretary Evans a number of times. He's a fine man. He's done a great job at Commerce, a real patriot. Do you have any knowledge of whether I know Don just wants to go back to Texas, but do you have any knowledge of whether that this was something that the White House wanted?
Oh, to get Mr. Evans to leave? No,
yeah.
I have no knowledge of that at all.
I don't think that's the case.
I think it's traditional that a lot of people say after the first term, 4 years is enough, because, your family life it necessarily has to go downhill, and there's a lot of obligations. So, and I mean, he served the president, I'm sure, very well for 4 years. And I think the person who's coming in was, I think, very active in the campaign in Ohio. So
the new Commerce chairman? I mean, do you know who that is?
I wish I could remember his name, but I just remembered Ohio and campaign.
I haven't heard about that, but I do know that Attorney General is.
And Mr. Gonzalez.
Right, who's the White House counsel and another old friend of the president's. I would have to think that Mr. Ashcroft, of all people in the cabinet, would be the one that would deserve some time off. He's really taking it on the chin trying to enforce the Patriot Act.
But I also thought he'd be the one most likely to stay, because I would have thought that the evangelical Christians would love him above almost any other cabinet member.
Well, I don't think that that's – I mean, I think – I know he's had some health problems. And I'll tell you, Joan, nobody's been under the looking glass, under the magnifying glass like he has over the last 4 years, other than the president himself, I would think.
Right. He had his gallbladder removed fairly recently.
Yeah. But speaking of Homeland Security, Joan, one of the things that you guys talk about on page one this week is the renewal of the Patriot Act, that you're sure that it would be renewed.
Well, yes, especially now that you have this particular majority in Congress. And
right.
There may be some changes, but we expect very few.
We met Congressman Chris Shays, a couple of weeks ago when we were in Connecticut at a dinner party, and I was so impressed with him. Folks, this is the guy who's taking the oil for food scandal on as a personal project. He's not going to let it go, and I congratulate him on that. Just won re-election in Connecticut. But he said in that meeting, Joan, in that dinner party, I should say, that he really believes that Patriot Act is a very important one. And as you know, Congressman Shays is no hard right winger either. And so I take my cues from a guy like that on the Patriot Act. 20 till. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And yo-yos, that's the way you do it. You play the guitar on the MTV.
We're back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with Joan Pride, Senior Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. I encourage you to check out their website, folks, at kiplinger.com, KIPLINGER.com. Don't forget you can subscribe to all of their publications there, the Kiplinger Letter, which is the flagship weekly publication that comes every week by email or mail, and I get mine both ways. And they also have the three biweekly letters, the Tax, the California, and the Agriculture Letter. And then they got a monthly magazine that you can get on newsstands or at the website. Joan, what's the name of that magazine?
That's right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
That one. What Joan said.
That one.
And you can subscribe online, or there's probably a phone number, too, isn't there, Joan?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
All right. So check them out, folks. And don't forget the websites. A lot of the website is free. You can get a lot of good information there. And if you subscribe, you also have access to a lot of the things that are not free, some of the back stuff, the stuff in the back part of the website that's for subscribers. Joan, other things that are going to be on Mr. Bush's agenda this time include tort reform. That's a biggie for a lot of people, especially for small business owners.
Right, and it would seem to be, again, with the majority in the Senate, he's up to, I guess, 55 Republicans, and if it's possible to peel off a few Democrats, you would therefore possibly have a rock-solid 60-vote majority. So I would think tort reform is probably a no-brainer in the House, so I'm guessing tort reform has a better chance this year than ever.
Well, another thing for small business owners that's not on your list, but it's on my list, is association health plans. That's an example of something that's passed the House 8 times, and it's failed in the Senate 8 times. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hoping that we can get that turned around, pick up some of those folks in the Senate. That would really be a tremendous help to small business owners to be able to buy insurance as a group, in a larger group across state lines.
Oh, sure.
Would really be a benefit for small business. But the key, it's going to be interesting to me, Joan, over the next 6 months to identify what Mr. Bush's administration thinks he can do in the next 4 months, I mean, next 4 years, and what he thinks he can get started in the next 4 years.
Yeah.
I don't think tax simplification can be completed in 4 years. I don't think the privatization of Social Security can be completed in 4 years. But I definitely think he can head those in the right direction, get the momentum going.
Well, so do you think tax reform would then be a more incremental kind of thing? Because back in 86, the last time we did a kind of a reform movement, I realized that they didn't get rid of the tax code, but it was reformed pretty substantially.
Significantly.
That took about a year and a half to 2 years.
Yeah, but see, that only reformed the current code. That didn't abolish the current one and start over with a new one. And that's what I think Mr. Bush wants to do, and that's what I want to do.
Well, do you really think that's possible?
Not in 4 years. That's my point. No, I think it is possible, but not in 4 years.
Mm.
I see.
And
that's
because there have been efforts to do this for years and years
that's
and
right.
years. You had former Congressman Bill Archer and
right.
former Congressman, and I'm losing my mind here. I've forgotten his name, but
yep.
the gentleman who was the former minority leader of the House when the House was Democrat.
Army.
He was the, Dick Army, thank you.
Army and Archer, and also the NFIB was working on that pretty heavy, too.
For years, and never mm-hmm. went anywhere.
Well, that's right, but that all that was going on during a Democrat administration.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, so I think it can happen. I don't, but I'm not optimistic about it being finished in the next 4 years. But I think if we can move in that direction, I think that'll help. I think tort reform can happen. I think association health plans can happen. They can get energy legislation, Joan. They can do that in 4 years. That you know about that.
Yes.
I think that can happen. There are a lot of things that can happen, but he's got to spend his capital wisely, and the war in Iraq has got to settle down.
That's right. Well, you heard it here first.
Yeah, exactly. Joan, what are the Democrats going to do? It's interesting to watch their weeping and wailing and
their self-flagellation.
Yeah, and some of them, you know, are still blaming the Americans. They can't believe that Americans have rejected them.
Well, I think I don't agree that Americans rejected
that's
them.
That's what they say.
I think. Well, no, I don't think that's not what I read. I mean, they know that 51 million people voted for the Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
So
maybe I should have said the majority rejected them.
Well, the majority of people who voted.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think they have to figure out. You know, I thought Clinton sort of had the paradigm figured out as the quote unquote new Democrat, but I think there's been a little bit of backsliding. So I think they have to go back to the drawing board.
Well, one of the things they've got to do is quit blaming the voters and quit blaming Republicans and look to themselves.
Well, in what I've read, I don't see any blame of voters. I mean, I'm reading a lot of blame of themselves.
Yeah.
In terms of trying to figure out what the correct coalition is.
There is some of that. No, I agree with you. There's some of that. But some of the pundits have done that, as you know. Some of the columnists.
I would blame the people that didn't come out to vote. If they're upset that Bush won, they only have themselves to blame if they didn't come out to vote.
Well, that's true. That's true. Joan, let's move on down and talk about who the next leader of the Democrat Party is going to be in the Senate. Is that going to be Harry Reid?
Well, yes, because as you know, Senator Daschle was defeated for re-election.
Right. He was the hat trick for the Republicans this time.
Right, and there was talk of Senator Chris Dodd running against Senator Reid, but he saw the handwriting on the wall and realized that Mr. Reid had things sewn up.
Mm-hmm.
So he may run for governor in Connecticut.
Mr. Reid was campaigning for that position before the votes were all in South Dakota.
Probably.
As I remember. Quick break, 10 till. We'll be right back. More to come after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors.
When this old world starts getting me down, and people are just too much for me to face.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, the court system, the Supreme Court justices, the lineup of the justices over the next 4 years is probably going to change, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's got to, because you've got some pretty old judges there.
Yeah.
And
Rehnquist had a little bout this week.
And Mr. Rehnquist is ill. And you've had other justices who aren't necessarily ill now, but they have battled cancer. So, yeah, I think we're saying that Bush may get to nominate up to four justices for the Supreme Court.
I'm going to predict there's going to be a surprise vacancy.
Ooh.
I'm predicting right now there will be a surprise over the next 4 years. There'll be a surprise vacancy.
Huh.
But you also say Kiplinger also reports that the president will be able to name up to 200 more lower court judges.
Right.
And of course, with picking up four more senators in the Senate, and that ought to bode a lot better for him if they can get this this the situation with the head of the Judiciary Committee straightened out. Mr. Spector, that's been a little controversy, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, it depends on whether you believe it's a situation or not. He's trying to say that it's not, but conservatives jumped on some of his statements to say that he was indicating there would be a litmus test for justices or judges who the president nominated.
Right. One of the people who Kiplinger thought was going to be maybe a next nominee is now the Attorney General, Alberto Gonzalez.
And you know why?
Because he's Hispanic?
Well, no, the scuttlebutt was that it would be easier to get him confirmed as Attorney General than as a Supreme Court justice.
Ah, okay. I didn't know that. That's very interesting. Anyway, this will be interesting. Folks, this could be one of the most historic 4 years of a presidency, Joan, in a long time. Would you agree with that?
Sure. It might. It just might.
Yeah. Okay, let's move over to page four and talk about the economy. How's the economy looking, Joan, to Kiplinger?
Well, I was hoping we could skip this part because it's not that. We're not trying to be too pessimistic here, but we're saying don't get too irrationally exuberant either. And the main problem being that high prices are still high. Energy prices are a drag on the economy.
Yeah, major drag. Well, you know, Joan, I was talking to Sam. We visited with Sam Norwood of Tatum Partners in the previous hour, talking about his survey that he conducts of about 400 professionals, business people who are business leaders across the country. And you know, they're talking about, you know, growth rate in the 3% range. And that's not a bad thing.
Which some countries would kill for.
And that's about double Europe.
Right.
And we're feeling a little dour about it, and about 3%, and that's about double the European rate.
Well, you know, we're never happy, because when it was up around 5 or 6, people were worried about the economy overheating.
Right. Well, one of the things, the analogy that I made, Joan, was if you're making a 10-mile trip and you go at 90 miles an hour, you're only going to get there about 3 minutes faster than if you went 60 miles an hour. Look how much safer you'd be. That's the difference between 3% growth represents 60 miles an hour, and 5% growth represents 90 miles an hour. At the closer we get to 5% growth, the more dangerous I think that the trip is, and we only get there just a little bit faster.
Yeah, that's a good way to rationalize a lower growth rate.
I think that the 6%, I mean the 3% area. I mean, I wouldn't mind if it was 3.5, but I'll take 3.5.
But you'll take
growth.
Three.
I'll take 3 to 3.5 to 3.75. I'll take that all day long, because it really helps all of us adjust to the changes more healthy,
right.
in a more
sure
healthy
does.
Way.
Yeah.
So we just got to be real careful about that. Joan, one of the things that that you guys pointed out is that job growth in the coming months are going to be more modest. But we had a pretty good October, didn't we?
Right, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, that 337,000 jobs gained net in October was quite a bit more than economists had expected.
Yep.
In that month.
Well, and you know, also, Joan, the number of small businesses that are being created, I haven't seen the numbers on this, but my instincts tell me that the number of new small businesses, and I'm talking about micro businesses, people starting their own home-based businesses, we're getting so much more interest in home-based businesses from our audience, that I really think that that's an undercurrent that hasn't been measured yet.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
That,
sure.
That can be added to these jobs, mm-hmm. that probably won't even emerge and be counted in any significant way, maybe for 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
So anyway, that's my anecdotal opinion of that. Joan, thank you for being here. Good job today.
Thank you, Jim.
As always, and we'll see you next week.
Sounds great.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editor. She'll be back. I got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and happy Veterans Day to all of you veterans, past and present. God bless our men and women in uniform standing a post around the world. Wherever you are, God bless you. God be with you. We are very proud of you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.